news, everyone.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
I see dead people.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
And knowing is half the battle.
What the deuce?
Must have the precious.
And I'll form the head.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take it away.
What you talking about, Willis?
Wow, infotainment.
Welcome to another edition of Transmissions Extra, where the extra X is for extra excitement.
I'm on the wrong show.
Don't do that. Hey, I'm Big C, a.k.a. Charles. Like I was switching it around there.
For those that can't tell, Charles is winging it.
I'm here with good friends Yoshi.
What up, Biggie C?
Jeremy.
Howdy.
And Daryl.
Hey, everybody.
And we're here to bring you another Revolution review. So we're continuing with the IDW Revolution event. And we've reached the midpoint with Revolution issue number 3 of the 5-part miniseries. And this is where things get real. Revolution number 3, chapter 3, O Ship of State. That's the title. I didn't think
that.
No, title.
I got you.
I'm glad there was a right. P there.
Written by John Barber and Cullen Bunn. Line art by Fico Asio. Colors by Sebastian Cheng. Letters by Tom B. Long, edited by David Hedgecock, editor-in-chief Chris Ryle, and publisher Ted Adams. Again, we have 8 covers for this issue, and again, we are not going to go through all of them, but I will ask each of our hosts which cover they are picking. So, Daryl, I'll start with you. Which is your favorite color cover?
Oh, damn. I was looking at these earlier. I actually am not a huge fan of any of them. They all have a certain amount that they suck. If I am picking one, I'm probably going to go with the Guido Guidi cover. It has no Transformers on it, but it has Rom the Space Knight and Baron Karza?
No, a Acroyear, I think.
Who?
Acroyear.
Acroyear.
That's according to our listener, Sergio, that's how you say it. You don't say Acroyear like we all thought it was.
Hey, Sergio, I can't tell you how much Charles hates being corrected. You could hear it in his voice, couldn't you? I did.
Well, that would be the one that I will probably pick up because I am trying to get all of the all the issues, but trying to get a different color from each one. But I don't particularly like any of these. They all have a special kind of garbage to them. So, yeah. I wish there was a sketch cover version of this one because I'd get that.
So none of these covers are better than nothing at all.
That's right.
All right. Yoshi.
Yo. Who? I'm seconding Daryl's choice. I really am into Guido's art for some reason more so now. Who colored that?
It looked like he did.
Yeah, I think if they don't list the colorist separately, then you can assume the artist did the coloring.
I dig the style, you know, but it harkens back to Regen 1, so that might be why. But that's my choice.
Cool. Jeremy.
It's probably no surprise that I like subscription cover C from James Biggie. The that Guido cover is a close second, but I love these that are like propaganda posters.
Cool.
You should frame them.
Yeah, that's what I would like. I'd like it like a big poster version of these. So Charles, which one do you like?
I am also going to side with Daryl and Yoshi and pick the Guido Guidi retailer incentive cover. I also am a fan of Guido's art and his style. The style that he's adopted after Regeneration 1, I think, is really nice. I like the throwback style and the coloring. So that is Retailer Incentive Cover B.
By it's the Guido best Guido. Of the worst, isn't it?
You know, I don't hate it.
Yeah, it's just I still not like
a,
it.
Yeah, it's not a property I care about, but it's not bad art, dude.
Yeah.
There's not even a Transformer on it. I mean, come on.
That's what man. I said. That's it's not a property I care about, but it's still the art isn't bad.
Yeah.
Daryl, I know I'm using okay. words and it hurts.
It's okay, Daryl. We don't all have to agree on everything.
But you should agree with me on this.
We did. We picked that cover. What
let's
more do
talk
you want?
Revolution.
All right, now let's get into the story. We zoom in on Microspace, where the Micronauts, in their mini spaceship, the Heliopolis, have recently breached the Entropy Cloud, a giant disturbance that seems to be consuming and destroying all of Microspace. The Micronauts are surprised they're not dead themselves after entering the cloud, and have come to find out that within the Entropy Cloud floats the giant, to them, dormant body of their apparent creator of their universe, Micronus Prime, one of the 13 primes of ancient Cybertron. Their enemy, the would-be Microspace conqueror and dictator, Baron Karza, also followed the Micronauts into the Entropy Cloud, but due to the cloud messing with time and space, he's actually been trapped there for years and had time to make a plan to destroy the cloud and save Microspace, so he can conquer it for himself later. Baron Karza has opened a communication link from his base on Micronus Prime's giant body to the Micronauts and explains to them that despite their differences, they must work together to save Microspace. Karza has discovered that Micronus Prime is a gateway to another universe, and in that other universe is a substance that can destroy the Entropy Cloud, or 13. Karza has a plan, but time is running out, and he needs the Micronauts' help to succeed. Oz, the Micronauts' ship captain, is skeptical of trusting Baron Karza, along with the rest of his crew, but it doesn't look like they have much of a choice. Back at G.I. Joe headquarters, Matt Tracker, the Mask Commander, is pissed. He confronts Scarlet and Miles Mayhem about how they lied about the true nature of the Cybertronians. They're living beings, not just machines. Tracker is a scientist, not a soldier. He didn't sign up to kill people, whatever form they take. Scarlet replies that they're in a war for the Earth's very survival, and people die in war. Miles Mayhem backs her up and leads Tracker off to continue to try and mollify him. In another area, Vanessa Warfield, a.k.a. Ice Queen, and Sly Rax, a.k.a. Stiletto, are simultaneously dissecting and interrogating their new prisoner, the Autobot Cup. Cup is trying to reason with them, but they're not listening, until he mentions the bit about Or 13. Vanessa tells Cup she'll pass on any info he has to the U.S. president and the right people and help get his mistake in capture sorted out. Cup is momentarily relieved and tells her that Or 13 is becoming unstable due to some kind of transdimensional space bridge, and the Autobot city itself is sitting on top of a huge cache of the volatile crystals. Of course, Vanessa has no intention of letting Cup go after he spills this crucial information, and they laugh in his face. Cup realizes he's been played, but there's nothing he can do about it now. Meanwhile, in Autobot City, Prime and the Autobots, and Soundwave, are now talking with Rom the Space Knight rather than punching him. He fills them in on the Dire Wraith's infiltration of Earth, and Optimus tells Rom about Or 13 and its properties, which the Wraiths are apparently exploiting to become more powerful and more resistant to Rom's weaponry. And there's more. Windblade has discovered that the Titan that forms Autobot City on Earth has a connection via its space bridge portal to the ancient Micronus Prime and a dying universe that was his final resting place, Microspace. Windblade wants to help save Micronus Prime and this dying universe, as does Soundwave with his new reverence for all life. But Optimus Prime says safeguarding Earth and its people must take priority. Suddenly, Aileron arrives, severely damaged, having narrowly escaped the attack by Mask in the last issue. She tells everyone about the new technology the humans have that hides their transforming attack vehicles from Cybertronian sensors, and relays the info Cup told her about how Or 13 is being transported to another universe. This lines up with Windblade's discovery, proving all these events are connected. Prime is firm that they must focus on Earth and the current Dire Wraith threat and Or 13 threats, rather than chasing down this alternate universe. But Rom sees an opportunity as he looks at the space bridge portal. We go back to the G.I. Joe headquarters, and Scarlet gets news from Doc's autopsy. The Joes who were murdered by Rom in issue 1 weren't human at all, including Joe Colton. Scarlet orders Mainframe to put everyone on alert since their entire military structure might be compromised. She then sends a classified text message to a special operative she knows will get the job done. And the operative texts back, "Who do you want me to kill?" Cut to Baron Karza's base, where he's talking via holographic projection with a mysterious ally. Karza is impatient to act so that he can save Microspace, but his ally urges that they must wait. Other associates have come under scrutiny, and they'll only get one chance to act. If Earth is destroyed before they can harvest the Ore 13, Karza won't be able to destroy the Entropy Cloud anyway. Karza is unconvinced and decides to act on his own. He decides to use the Micronauts as pawns to enact his plan. But before Karza can contact the Micronauts, they are visited by the mysterious Time Traveler, a member of the race of ancestors, or descendants, of Oz's species, the Pharoids. The Time Traveler tells Oz that the decision he makes now will decide the fate of Microspace as Micronus Prime begins to awaken and Karza activates a portal to another universe in Micronus Prime's chest. Back in Autobot City, Windblade and Optimus Prime continue to discuss their options for saving both Earth and Microspace, as Soundwave tends to Aileron's injuries. Unnoticed, Rom becomes enamored with the space bridge portal inside Autobot City. As he approaches it, Baron Karza activates the bridge from within Microspace. The portal is open on both sides. Karza plans to send the Micronauts into the other universe, but suddenly, the Ore 13 starts flowing back into Microspace, causing a chain reaction. Karza interprets this as an attack from his alien ally and plans to respond in kind. The Micronauts ship is also caught in this reaction, and Oz accuses the Time Traveler of not telling them the whole story. The Time Traveler continues being mysterious and tells Oz that the only way to save Microspace is for him to take their ship into the portal before it closes. Oz doesn't see any other options and orders his ship into the unknown on the other side of the space bridge. On that other side, Rom's armor has started to resonate with the Ore 13 and the space bridge. He can now control it and send all the Ore 13 crystals into Microspace, saving the Earth but also destroying Microspace in the process. Windblade, in jet mode, crashes into Rom, disrupting his control, and tries to convince him not to destroy another universe just to save the Earth. Optimus Prime arrives to see what Rom is doing and is horrified. Windblade accuses Prime of setting Rom on this path in the first place with his talk of Earth taking priority at the expense of Microspace. Prime agrees that he was wrong and tries to reason with Rom. Optimus doesn't want to become yet another Prime that sacrifices countless innocent lives. Soundwave tries to shut down the Space Ridge himself, but Rom blasts him before he can act. Finally, Windblade and Optimus succeed in convincing Rom that they can't save the Earth by sacrificing all the innocent lives of another universe. Rom stops controlling the Ore 13 and the space bridge shuts down, just as a tiny spaceship flies through into the chamber at the last second. The Micronauts have arrived on Earth. The Micronauts are extremely confused by their surroundings. They realize they are inside a massive artificial structure, but don't understand how anyone could build something so huge. They don't have much time to ponder this, though, as they are confronted by what looks, to them, like a giant robot in the shape of Baron Karza, about to attack. But we know that this is actually the G.I. Joe Super Ninja Snake Eyes, who has infiltrated Autobot City. To be continued. That is the end of Revolution, issue number 3. So, lots and lots of stuff to process here. It was too much for me, but I'll let you guys say your piece first, and I'll give my thoughts at the end.
Pick one of us to go first. Pick one of us to go first.
Yoshi.
I wish I'd never learned to read. This is okay, Daryl. I really hope you'll back me up here. This is the dump cake of crossovers. That is the title of this episode. I wrote some notes down while you were going through it, Charles.
Okay.
The first one, Would you apply at Audible? In all seriousness, would you apply at Audible? You could tell him no, but would you do it just for shits and giggles?
I'll think about it.
All right, cool. My notes are short. The Micronaut ship reminds me a lot of the ship that they rescued Neo on from The Matrix.
Hmm.
Baron Karza, that whole first act with him felt a little Wrath of Khan-y to me. And then what I have here in giant letters is dump cake of crossovers. So, yeah, next.
Okay. I like that description, Yoshi.
Thank you. The only thing I like about this is Snake Eyes. That one page, almost flawless. The rest of it can go fuck itself in a cake of dumps.
All right. Daryl, do you agree?
Well, I've never had a dump cake, so
I don't know if any of us have.
So I can't speak to that.
If you can look at what it would taste like, you're looking at it.
But this was a whole lot of fucking reading. That's what I as I was going through it, I was like, God damn it, they're doing a lot of fucking talking. And I was thinking, like, there was a couple points during the book where they could have been a little bit more specific on points where Optimus, is talking, Soundwave is there. He's talking, I believe he's talking to Rom. At first I thought he was talking to Soundwave, which really confused me why he didn't mention it. But then I thought I think afterwards he's talking to Rom, but he mentions that, trying to find the exact line here. Let's see here. Or-13 is a synthetic element implanted in Earth eons ago by a Cybertronian, right? Well, yeah. If you've been reading the books, you know the Cybertronian is Shockwave.
Yes.
But, I mean, he's talking, and Soundwave, Windblade, and Rom are all right there. Now, Windblade, I can understand. I believe Shockwave was dead by the time Windblade would have come on the scene, or
it was they're both
right at the same happened time
during Dark Cybertron,
right? But I don't think Windblade ever met Shockwave. Right. Soundwave, he's gonna know who Shockwave is, right? So I don't think there's a point in it being that generic of a response. You know, it was put on Earth by a Cybertronian, right? Well, you could say Shockwave there. That, you know, that kind of threw me. Like, why don't you just say it?
Well, I mean, if he's talking to Rom, Rom probably doesn't know or care who Shockwave is.
Right. I'm just looking at the panels, and when he's saying it, the previous panels have him in Soundwave. The preceding panels have him in Windblade. And then it's not until a few panels down the way until you see a reflection of him and Windblade in Rom's face. So I'm not entirely sure exactly who he's talking to. But I mean, if he's talking to Windblade, then there's a chance that Windblade doesn't know who. But I mean, Windblade has been hanging out with Starscream an awful lot, so you'd think that she would know who Shockwave is. Anyway, getting off of that, the story threw me a bit. It was all over the place. I think this book was treated as we've got a lot of the one shots have happened. We've got the first two issues of the main title happened. We need to start bringing all this shit together. And I think this is the book in which they decided, let's bring everything fucking together now. So
they're throwing everything into the bowl.
Yes.
Making the dump cake.
That's right. So this is your first look of everything in here. And it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And the writing shows it, because the writing's all over the board and there's tons of it. And I give the people credit. They're trying their best to try and make it as easy to go through as possible. And the art is still really, really good. Save for some of the the styles on the Transformers, but that's, again, that's personal preference, right? So, I mean, somebody might really, really like them, but I still think the art is really good. Can you imagine reading this book and the art being shit, right? If this was Tom Scioli drawing this, holy fuck, right?
You don't have to call out people. He's not here. He's nowhere near this crossover.
I think you don't like Tom Scioli. That was when the G.I. Joe book really got good, is when he started just throwing stuff, you know, at you right and left.
I think we do need to call him out because his art is shit.
That's personal.
Yes, it is.
But anyway, I think the art is a definite pro to this, because if the art were shit, it would, you'd just be lost the entire book. So it's a mess. It's the first part of them trying to, it's like when you're trying to organize your office, you always end up making a bigger mess to start, right? That's the way I attribute this book. It's the beginning of the cleanup. So everything has just been thrown out on the floor, on the tables, on the desks, and they're going to start sorting shit back into its new positions after this book. But this book is an absolute clusterfuck.
All right. Jeremy.
Well, I definitely agree with Daryl's office analogy, like the cleanup analogy. That definitely does kind of seem like what's happening here. One of my big issues with this is it really requires you to have knowledge of all the different series that have already happened, particularly Micronauts, because that's such a big part of this particular issue. You know, if you weren't reading Micronauts, you don't know what a time traveler is. You don't know what's going on with the whole Baron Karza. There's a time jump. Like, what, you know, a lot of things are mentioned here that are explained in either the ongoing or the Revolution one shot that just, you know, if you aren't reading them, you're like, what? I have no idea what they're talking about. One thing that kind of looked confusing to me, I'm assuming that the person that Karza is talking to is Destro.
Maybe.
In that hologram.
Or it could be, I was thinking it could be a dire wraith in human form.
Well, I mean, we just, it looks like a bald humanish form.
Yeah.
But then on the next page, we have the time traveler drawn, you know, very similarly to that image that Karza was talking to. I don't believe they were the same person, but we don't really know a lot about the time travelers to know, you know, if they might be playing both sides and working with Karza. Mm-hmm. So that just was confusing. Other than that, I mean, the art was fine. And I don't know, I'm glad that things are finally kind of all in one place physically in this universe where things are going to happen. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the final part of this crossover, just to get it out of the way, get back to the new reality of how these comics are going to be, and then get on with the stories we want.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about it, Charles?
Yeah. So I feel like, it's like, you know, for the first two issues, I felt like things were relatively straightforward. All the pieces, you know, I think we were all kind of, you know, we had concerns about trying to mash all these different properties into a single universe, into a single narrative. And the first two issues, I thought, were actually doing a good job of that with you had Transformers, G.I. Joe, Mask, and ROM. And I think Micronauts is just the straw that breaks the camel's back. It just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the other four properties. It doesn't really, you've got too much backstory that you have to try and cram in to get people to understand how the Micronauts fit in. It just feels clunky. It feels clumsy. It doesn't really work. And I think that's the problem with this book. And like you said, Jeremy, you have to have all the backstory of the Micronauts series to have, you know, any understanding of what these characters are doing and who they are. And, you know, it feels like it's a real stretch to try and pull the Micronauts and Microspace into this universe with everything else. And I think it just doesn't work. I mean, you know,
you can tell it's forced.
Yeah, it's really forced. It's really clunky. It just, I just don't like the how it's being pushed together with the, I think if we didn't have Micronauts and we just had the other four properties, I think everything else kind of actually works relatively well together. You've got kind of a relatively straightforward story. You've got, the multiple factions are all kind of facing off against each other. In the background, you've got the Dire Wraiths, who could be like kind of the big bad villains that everyone needs to work together to fight, but since they all have their different perspectives, they're not. And, the series could be about, by the end, everyone realizing that they need to work together. But throwing Baron Karza and the Micronauts in just really makes everything seem unbalanced. And I don't know. I mean, I wonder how it's going to go for the last two issues, but I feel like it's just too much. I feel like the Micronauts is just one property too much. I do agree with Daryl that the art is really nice. I still am enjoying the art. I still think Optimus Prime and Windblade look really weird, but everyone else looks good. I like the artist Fico Asio. He seems to like dismembering Transformers. He's again got Cup all disassembled in multiple pieces, and it looked pretty good. And Aileron with all her damage, battle damage and everything. So those are really strong parts of the issue. But everything with the Micronauts I just didn't like. And on their own, I was actually enjoying the Micronauts series by itself. But I don't think it's a good fit for the rest of the Revolution universe.
With most large crossover events, you generally have a bunch of heroes taking on one big bad guy.
Right.
And here we're sitting with it. Like we've got Miles Mayhem, Baron Karza, and we've got the Wraiths, right? Mm-hmm. So,
From the Transformers perspective, you have the G.I. Joes as well.
Right, of course, yeah. So this is a lot, I can see how this could work with everything, but there's just too many elements for bad guys to try and focus on. If it turns out that Baron Karza here has been talking to what you think is the G.I. Joe guy, whatever his name is.
Destro,
yeah, that guy. Then Destro could be the biggest bad guy, right? Leading it all. Because, with Venom being so closely tied to Cobra, then I could see that working.
We don't know that yet.
I'm just speculating. But still. But then you have, then I can see where maybe that would work. But as it stands right now, it's everything's all over the place. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make a couple of notes just to hit a couple of references. So the title of the issue is another reference to a poem about the American Revolution. And this one was written by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. So that is O Ship of State. Continuing that theme. And if you are interested in the Micronauts, I think this, we just released the review for the Micronauts Revolution tie-in, and it does this. The beginning of this book basically picks off right where the Revolution tie-in for Micronauts left off. So if you are interested in knowing more about the Micronauts, that's there. But I think in that review, we actually said you could skip this one. So. Maybe we should revise that. I mean, at least if you're trying to follow the story. But I guess the good thing is, though, that the Humble Bundle that was just released by IDW last week contains all these issues. So, if you want to get the Micronauts and the other as currently published Revolution tie-ins. You can pick that up for cheap. We also have a reference to the Tilalar 1 Revolution tie-in that hasn't been published yet. So that's another thing. We've got a kind of a hole in the story where Windblade just randomly, as soon as we see Windblade, she's like, oh yeah, I know about Microspace and Micronus Prime because, yeah, I did some research. Okay. And, yeah, I just felt like it was too much too fast. It was, you know, not only a dump cake, but a dump cake of exposition in this issue. And yeah, I think I would cut out Microspace or Micronauts from this whole crossover. Let Micronauts be its own separate thing. But this is, you know, it seems to just completely throw everything off. So that's my take. So I guess, we don't have any other further thoughts. That's our Revolution issue number 3 review. Before we sign off, I do want to read an email from one of our listeners, Paul, who actually, before we started doing the Revolution reviews and the Transmissions Extra, he asked us about doing some of the other IDW comics, in particular ROM. So I just wanted to read his email, and he said, just listen to some awesome extras. I'm really stoked y'all are doing these episodes. As a kid, I had a few mask vehicles, but don't recall watching the show until later in life. Had no idea of who or what ROM the Space Knight is. Big C, the way you tell the story puts me right in the book. Anyway, not sure if you were planning this, but I'm glad my idea, Extras on Revolution, was well received. Great job, guys. Love what you do. Keep it up. So thank you, Paul, and thank you for that idea. We'll give you credit, even though we talked about it a little bit ourselves as well. All right. So I think with that, we'll say goodnight until the next Transmissions Extra and the next IDW Revolution tie-in. Bye, everybody.
To all our one.
Later.
Dump cake.
Yo, Joe.
I know he's after battle.